off show. Listen to me every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on Shadow World Radio. If anybody knows me, we know. I keep it real. I don't sugarcoat anything. Listen in. Hello, hello, hello. It is Tuesday night, the Every Woman Talk Show. I'm so sorry I missed you guys last week. I had some personal things that was going on I had to take care of, but I am back. Miss you guys so much. We were going to come back with Sisterhood because that's where we left off at, and that was what we were talking about when we were going to come in, but I decided to just switch up a little bit like I always do. And we're going to be talking about are black men being incarcerated or in incarceration, jail, and, you know, statistics and, you know, what we can do to help our brothers, you know, stay out of trouble or not even if not even in trouble, because we know so many of our brothers have been accused of things they have not done and have served time for that. But we want to make sure that we have a healthier future for our sisters, too, with the brothers not going to prison. So we want to talk about that tonight. I do have a guest coming in a little later on this evening. I was reading on a website I was on, and it was talking about not, how do they put this? They should stop giving out statistics that aren't true. So when we always say, you know, there's so many more black people in black men in jail than, you know, any other nationality. Well, when we start thinking about it, it's true to a certain degree. Why is that true, though? It's true because we are more profiled a certain kind of way than, of course, the counterparts of white people. So, you know, as far as the Hispanic and our black brothers, we are targeted a lot more. We are given the more time to do when it comes to the crimes that they have committed. So I can't wait to talk to our host because, you know, I want to hear his perspective on it. He has a website to go on, too, to check it out. But for me, I know I have had family members who have been incarcerated. Yes, they did the crime, so they had to do the time. However, I have two brothers who were incarcerated who also had partners in the crime that they committed that did not get the time that my brothers were given for the crime that they committed. And they robbed a bank. So, I'm an open book. I never really, you know, I'm not afraid of telling who I am, but who I am. Yesterday is who I am, who makes me who I am today. So I'm pretty much an open book. I don't have a problem talking about anything or sharing my stories. They robbed the bank. They were very young. They robbed the bank. It was six of them. Four brothers, two Caucasians. Both my brothers got 10 years. They didn't do 10 years, but they got 10 years. And the two Caucasians got 2.5 years. Same exact crime, same exact thing, charged for everything. I was very young at the time, so it didn't really occur to me that how unfair our justice system was because I was very young when it happened. And as we got older and we talked about it, to this day I never could still understand how the justice system worked so differently for them than for my brother. My brothers are here to talk about it now. They both have passed on. I wish they were here so we could get their insight on what they thought happened, but they're no longer here, so can't do that. But for me, just coming from an urban area and watching how things go down here, we see all this brutality on TV. We see all this brutality on the internet. We see all this brutality on our Facebook pages about, you know, police officers. And, you know, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, I have to talk to this from both perspectives because I have nephews who are in the force. And then I have family members who have been incarcerated. So I'm pretty much coming from both ends. So you want to give, you know, the police officers the benefit of the doubt. But then when you see all this crazy stuff, and no, everybody is not the same. We have to always put this out there that, you know, it's not the majority. It may be the minority, but the minority is what's being shown, and the minority is what's hurting our community today. So it doesn't matter whether it's the majority or not. If it's 1 out of 10, it doesn't matter. That one police officer should be got to go. You got to go because you are hurting our communities. You are hurting our families. So it doesn't matter whether it's majority, if it's a minority, it is what it is. So we want to give them the benefit of the doubt. We know it's a very hard job to do. Their lives are at stake, but it's a job you chose to do. Nobody forced you to become a police officer. It's a job that you chose to do. The show tonight is not going to be from the perspective of a police officer, but from a perspective of someone who's been incarcerated. We will do a show thereafter, and I will also have police officers come on because I know so many, like I said, some of my family and some that I'm very close with. And we'll have them come on and we'll have them share their perspective on how life is being a police officer in an urban area and a non-urban area. And see, maybe we can understand both parts and maybe have a better understanding of how we can deal with this and our communities can deal with it and make it easier on both parties so that we don't have some of our brothers getting killed, nor do we have our police officers being killed out here by the young brothers that are doing things they have no business doing. So I think it's a serious topic that we need to talk about. And I changed the mode today because of all the things that have happened in the past month or so. You know, I watched on Facebook a young lady at a pool party being beaten savagely by a police officer. This little girl couldn't possibly even compare to doing anything to this man to what he did to her. And there was no excuse for it, absolutely no excuse for what he did to this young lady. But we see them, on the other hand, white people doing these crimes. The white guy who just shot up the church in North Carolina, we see them walking out with even no handcuffs on. Just come on out. We're going to take you to the police station. Everything's cool. No handcuffs. Nothing on around the neck. Nothing around, you know, the ankles. No chains. None of that. Really, honestly, like, what is this girl coming to? Like, where do we go from here with this? And they sit and say that this man was a child at 21 years of age, and that was a black man at 21 years of age. Child would never be in the same sentence, nor would his punishment be anything of a child. It would be of an adult man, and whatever they could stick to him and whatever would be the fool's penalty, that's what that young brother would get. Now, what do you think about all this?
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought up the topic. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me make sure my headset is good. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yeah, I hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, I hear you.
It's interesting you brought up this topic. You know, I'm just sitting here as I'm listening to you. I mean, first of all, you know, ladies and gentlemen, let me applaud Uli, because a lot of times in our society, we have so many women who, I'm not saying for all our women. I'm just saying you have a lot of women that will be down on brothers that or men that's been incarcerated, you know, regardless of their circumstances. And for you to bring light to that situation and to even address the topic from a woman's perspective, I have to applaud you, first of all, because, you know, it's a struggle. It's a bona fide struggle, and it's something that we need to recognize, you know, as a community. You know, I know, and I can't speak for no other ethnic groups, but I can speak for me being an African-American male, that the disparity of black men, young black men, incarcerated is just phenomenal. I'm sitting reading the stat. While people, okay, let me just read this off, but I got it here. This is a fact I got off there, you know, basically just researching. People of color make up 30% of the United States population. They account for 60% of those in prison. Right, exactly. And it's crazy that the stat, it goes up, like, consistently, you know.
But let me tell you what I get out of that, man.
African-American men.
Let me tell you what I get out of that.
It's crazy.
Let me tell you what I feel about that. And this is just my opinion. I honestly believe that when they gave us the right to vote, when they gave us the right to call us and we said we have equality, when we already know there's nothing equal about anything that we have, I believe that this was their way of now taking some of that equality back. Because once you have been have a felony record, you can no longer vote. You are no longer, in their eyes, a citizen anymore.
Right, absolutely. Right, absolutely.
So if you are taking the rights away from the majority of our black people to vote, then where does that leave our voice? Where does that leave our voice? Our voices are now limited now because half of us are limited for voting now. If we say that one out of every 10 black men are going in prison from the age of 19 to 39,
no, they say one to three.
One out of three.
It's one
that's
to three. So every
even
three.
Worse.
Right. That's even worse. Yeah, out of three black men, they're going to point to one and say, you will be in prison. You're guaranteed to be in prison. I mean, you know, and I believe that society has set a lot of our young men up for failure. And I know there's a lot of things that we try to teach our young men. We've tried to coach our young men. I mean, I know some phenomenal parents out here who've done all they can for their children. But you know what? Society is a son of a bitch, and
it
will
sure
do
is.
Everything it can to set,
it will swallow
to,
us.
Set
it will
the,
swallow
the most negative. Yep. No matter what. You can... be in an innocent place, wrong time. I've seen so many young men just by circumstance, victim of circumstances, and now they're in jail, or they're with a friend, they're trying to save someone's life, or they just around the wrong crowd, or they've been stereotyped. I mean, I got to talk about this young man, the one that's, if you don't mind, audience, because you brought a very sensitive topic up, and it's very dear to my heart. That young man who was in Rikers Island, let me try to get his name. He was incarcerated for stealing a book bag. He was held in solitary confinement, let alone abused physically, sexually about inmates, and found to be not guilty. Most of and then basically his high school years went away. And this young man, you know, just his whole life was decimated. And unfortunately, this young man took his own life. It saddened me in the worst way.
Well, you could never take that back. You know, once that happened to you, it's done. You know, it's done. When someone is taking your man, and I'm not even just talking about the rape part, I'm talking about just that you have to go through the process of going through the system in general. Going through the court, getting locked up and going to the county, then going to a prison for a freaking book bag. Are you serious? You can't be. And it's like, but they wait for the littlest thing to take our young brothers and destroy their lives. And here's the thing too: once that has happened, there's no. I don't care how much they lie and say that they have a rehabilitation thing set up for them. That's a lie. There is nothing for these brothers to come home to. But to go back out and do what they were doing already, and I'm not making excuses for them, but it's true. Some of them can get out of it. If you know the right people, then you may be able to lift your head up and walk away a little different. But let's just say 80% of them are not going to do that. 80% of them don't know people. 80% of them don't know what else to do when they come home, when they're trying to do the right thing, but they are penalized for, especially if they're penalized for something they did at such a young age, and then you are reprimanded for it year after year after year. And that's why Obama now is changing the law. And I pray that the law goes through, that he allows these brothers and some of these sisters to live their life so differently from the mistakes they have made. Because we all make mistakes. Do we make the same mistakes? No, we don't. And I'm not giving them a pass for making the mistake. I'm saying it was a mistake. For some of them, it's not a mistake. For some of them, it's a way of life. But we're not talking about them.
Right.
We're talking about the ones who have said, you know what, I got to go out there and sell these drugs and take care of my kids. You got caught and said, you know what, I'm not going to come out and do the same thing. I want to come out and I want to get a job and I want to work and I want to go to school. They're not doing it. You can't go to school. You can't get any financial aid. You can't get any housing.
That's right.
You can't get anything. Once you've done this, once you've made this mistake, they have made it where you have now become a non-citizen in my eyes. Like, you are not worthy of anything anymore. Which is not
so.
The
I mean, but you know what?
And
you know, let me just get right to this young man. His name is Khalif Browder. And I'm just sitting here just doing the research as I'm looking online. I mean, it's very unfortunate. And according to this, you know, I knew it was a little bit more. He was in 3 years, 3 years in Rikers Island without even being charged.
Unbelievable.
Exactly. 800 days of solitary confinement, surveillance footage. Clearly shows him being beaten by guards and fellow prisoners.
Oh,
now,
I saw that.
Right. That's crazy to me. He's never
first
been charged
all, Rikers
for 3 years.
Island, first of all, Rikers Island is nothing to play with. To
of
begin
course,
with.
Definitely not.
Nothing to play with. To see a young brother in there like that, definitely not a place where he should have been before he was sentenced for his time. And even when he was sentenced for his time, he should have been in Rikers Island.
Well,
I mean,
they
unbelievable.
They failed him. They failed. The system totally failed this young man because there's something called due process where he should have been put through in a timely fashion. They clearly state that every person is entitled to a speedy trial. Key point, speedy
trial.
Well,
first of all, whether or not he had a speedy trial or not, that should have never went to trial. That really should have never – he should have got probation and a fine for something as silly and minor as that. That brother should have never been in the system like that to begin with. Not for a crime such as that.
Let alone, I mean, you know, someone had to see that. And I'm just sitting there thinking, you know, they totally failed. I mean, who is his public defender? They failed him one day.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Granted, there are some men, unfortunately, we have some men that does things, some horrendous acts of people out here who has to serve justice. It is what it is. And I commend, I mean, trust me, I'm not knocking no COs over there, because there are some good men over there, good COs over there, men and female. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those listening to the show, you know, please do not take it as if we're shooting down any COs, because it could be just
well,
a
just
few that
about
make
that.
A
It's not
bad
the
life.
Majority we're talking about. It's the minority we're talking about. We're not talking about all police officers. We're not talking about all COs. We're talking about the ones who are effed up. Those are the ones we're talking about. Those are the ones we're calling out. Period.
You gotta say the word.
You gotta
say the word.
No, because you give me sorry, Nancy won't stop. We're gonna keep it clean. We're gonna keep it clean.
Okay.
We'll keep it clean. I've been doing good. Keep it clean. But seriously, we're not talking about all cops. We're not talking about all COs. We're not talking about all lawyers. We're not talking about all judges. We're talking about the effed up ones who does slimy, grimy-ass shit because we are, first of all, in where we are right now, we were just talking about this the other day. Right now, the blacks, we are not minorities anymore, first of all. We are not the minority anymore. If anybody can tell you that is a lie, whites are now going to be the new minority because we are completely outnumbering them by tenfold. But they're not going to tell you.
You're outnumbered, but they lock in the majority of our population into jail or trying to kill them all or whatever,
true.
You know, trying to kill the number.
That may be true.
Organized genocide.
But we have enough out here to stand up. And just like this young lady said the other day, when are we going to stand up? There is enough of us saying, for instance, the crime that was committed by the young white guy when he shot up the church. You know, his family's like, oh, well, you know, God forgive him. Fuck that shit. At some time, we can't keep saying, you know, God's going to take care of this and we're going to let God. Sometimes. We got to take care of things on our own. We got to take things in our own hands. And you can't keep turning a blind face to everything that they do to us, because they damn sure don't turn their head when it's something that we do to them. But sometimes we have to stand up and whatever means necessary, like Malcolm said, any means necessary sometimes. Because at some point, when are we going to stand up for our people? When are we going to stand up and say, no more of this? We're no longer going to accept it.
I agree.
You know, when are we going to have, you know, laws that are passed saying, you know, if you committed a crime that only once, you are not, you know, this stipulation doesn't apply to you. If you committed this kind of crime, then this stipulation doesn't apply to you. When are we going to stand up for our rights? Because we have none, really. Equality, where the hell is our equality at? We have no damn equality. We take what they give us, and that's what we have. Whatever they give us is what the hell we take. Yeah.
Now, Uli, I think we have a couple of people online, but however, I'm not going to know. Those listening to the show, if you want to talk to the host, you got to hit their prompt one. Hit the prompt one. Let us know that you want to talk to the host, and our boards will indicate that you want to talk to Uli and join this powerful conversation. So those who's online, if you want to talk to the host, just hit that prompt one, and feel free to chime in. The number is, Uli, I'm going to give them the number again for those who's listening online.
Yeah,
the number is, yes.
646-478-4507. You know, I love the fact that, you know, that you guys listen in, but it's so more important to hear your voice, to find out what you guys think, you know. And for me, it's like I said, it's a conversation of what can we do from here. It's not so much as let's just talk. What can we do? What movements can we put into play to change some things in our lives? You know, I'm 50, so I'm almost out the door. But I'm talking about for my children and my grandkids, and you know, what do we do to change this cycle? What can we do to change this cycle? I really need to hear what you guys have to say. You know, even if you guys want to talk behind scenes to producer Nash, tell him what, you know, your questions are, and he can give them to us, and we'll, you know, we'll talk about it from there. Some people don't want to be on the air, and I get that. That's not a problem. But if you have a voice and you want it heard, you want a question answered, just tell Nash, and we'll put it out there like that. We'll see what the other audience has to say about that. I'm still waiting for my guests to call in. I mean,
the boards is lit up. I mean, literally, the boards is lit up. I mean, once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you're calling in, you know, just hit that prompt one. I mean, the boards is lit up. Evidently, Udi, you struck a nerve with this topic. I'm literally watching the board lit up. That's our calling board alone. That's not even saying those are online. But this is an awesome topic. Just, you struck a nerve.
Yeah, it's just. Like, I come from a family, I guess most people know, that I have 10 brothers and 3 sisters. And, you know, I guess you could say out of 10 brothers, if only 2 of them ended up in prison, I guess we did all right. You know what I'm saying? Considering what the statistics are saying. You know, and my brothers, unfortunately, didn't even have to go that route because they were very intelligent college grads, but, you know, got some smart white people who told them they could make this money and they could do this and, you know, everything would be great and gravy for the family. And being very naive and being, you know, book smart, not so much a street smart, they did it. You know, they did it. And, yes, they had to pay for their crimes. And we had no issues with that. We had no issues with the time that they had to serve. We had an issue with the time that was given versus the time that was given to their counterparts. Very different, different. And nothing has changed. And we're talking about the 70s when that happened. And so we know if it happened in the 70s, nothing has changed from then to now. There's a problem. There's a problem, but how do we address this problem? And marching? I'm all for marching. I'm all for it. But I'm not for it if that's the only. And we're going to just march from down there, from here to damn Broad Street, and ain't shit going to happen. I'm not for that. I'm not for that.
Let me ask you a question, Udi. I mean, I'm watching the boards. I'm trying to work the boards. And also, I mean, this is a powerful topic, you know. Women, all right, you have a lot of men, young men out here. And you know, our young men, how do we reach, I mean, from a woman's perspective, I mean, you're a woman of a certain age. How can we talk to our children? I mean, because sometimes you got to talk to our young men in the street. They, you know, I don't got time for that. I don't want to hear that. How do we reach those? What methods can we use or something that maybe you've worked to try to talk to those who may not be our blood? Because they said it takes a community to raise a child. And that's something that we have lost as a community. Why can't we all come together to teach our young men and say, look, there's a consequence, young brother. You're out here doing what's just going to get you.
First of all, Nancy, we can't wait for them to become young men. We have to do this at a very young age. And when the Big Brother program was implemented years, years, years ago, it has dwindled down. And I think, and I say all the time, it doesn't take a brother, it doesn't take a man, it takes both a man and a woman to raise a child. So when you have the Big Brother thing, you should have women should be able to, you know, become one of their big sisters and take on to them. So we can't wait for them to get to a certain age. If we don't grab them by a certain age, that's when they get lost. That's when they fall through the cracks. We can't wait for them to become teenagers because at that point they think they're grown men, and why am I listening to you? So we have to do this way before teen adolescence, way before that time comes in, in order to really save our boys.
You know, for those who know just tuned to the show, myself, I've been working with young men for over 30-some years, whether it's scouting program, mentoring program, and I know just what I do is just a small part. And like you said, we got to reach them at a young age. You know, me personally, through my experience, it's not so much a quote-unquote, well, start talking to them at this age. You start training the young men at an early age. And our brothers, you know, I mean, you know, Udi, if you don't mind, I want to just tell you something to our brothers listening to the show, because the boys listening, you know, are lit up right now, literally. Fellas, there's a lot of women out here doing the best they can to raise their young man, or they may be out by themselves. Offer positive assistance by how you carry yourself on the street, how you talk to a woman, because a man's going to see that. A young man's going to watch that, emulate what they see. Because bad enough, we got society pacifying or not publicizing positive change or positive programs that can help our young men and keep them out of jail. But yet, you know, it's a bigger picture here. I mean, it's the fact that there's money in corrections. Yeah, I'm going to say it. That's exactly what it is.
Absolutely.
It's money in corrections. And there's more money in the treatment rather than the solution. And it just makes, excuse my language, it just makes me fucking sick that we constantly got to, you know, go through this. And they put a dollar sign on this correctional facility institution that they do for our young black men, because it's the money in the damn treatment.
Right.
Now, Uli, listen, I'm going to let you talk.
But
you're
putting more money into prisons than you are into school to prevent them to go to prison.
Exactly, but they don't want to do that. They do not want to. They don't want to put money in our communities. That's why you have all these various communities in the urban neighborhood that put more money in the treatment aspect of it. You know, let's put more guns. Let's make our police look paramilitary. You know, get some of that ass out the car. No disrespect, and I have a lot of fellow brothers in law enforcement.
Yes.
We got to be part of the community. Yes.
I'm gonna take them online.
You continue talking while I talk to them.
All right, honey, thanks. Well, you know, like I said, you know, it's a matter of when are we going to put our feet down and want something different for our communities. And if we don't do something, nothing's going to change. And guess what? We can't wait for Obama to do it because he's gone. We can't wait for our mayors to do it because they can only do it so much. Unless we have a voice, unless we share that voice, nothing's going to happen. Do we even go to our city council meetings and have voices there? No, I don't even think we do that. My sister used to work for City Hall. We go to city council meetings, and there would be 10 people in the room. 10 people in the room talking about what their city, their inner city needs. That's not enough to make a movement. They look at us like you're crazy. Like, y'all, go home, watch TV. We got this. And they're going to do exactly what they want to do. Nothing that the community needs but whatever they want to do. So we don't make a move. If we don't make a movement and not talk about something, nothing's going to happen. Stop talking and make a movement. It's time to make a movement now and not just continue to talk. It doesn't make any sense. You know, and as far as our young brothers are concerned, if we don't grab them at a young age, first of all, we let our young brothers 3 and 4 and 6 years old walk around here with their pants hanging off. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I wish I had a son or a grandson and you let them walk around with their pants falling off their asses.
Yeah,
we
got a caller. Are you ready for your caller?
I'm ready. I'm
ready.
You ready
for your caller?
Yes, I am.
All right, we're going to bring this gentleman on. This is Brother Jamie Woodard. It's online. There you go.
Good evening. How are you? Hey, how are you?
Jamie. Glad you could call in. And I know you were listening into the show. We were just, you know, a little passionate for a second, just going off a little bit. But I wanted you to come in and, you know, give us your perspective of what you thought about, you know, men and imprisonment. I know you know a lot about it. So I'll let you take the floor.
Thanks.
Go ahead and talk what you talk about.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I just want to say good evening to everyone tonight. My name is Jamie Woodard. I'm the founder of a website. The name of the website is called WeDeserveOurLivesBack.com. The reason I thought of the website was because I am a first-time nonviolent ex-federal offender. My crime at the time, which was almost 16 years ago, was theft of mail by an officer or employee. And what happened was I was actually dealing with credit cards and checks. And I got sentenced to Fifth and Correctional Facility in Cumberland County through the federal guideline system. My time was 14 to 21 months. And it may have not been a lot of time compared to other people that I've spoken to, but it was time in general. And what kind of like will haunt me for the rest of my life is that the federal guideline system for non-violent, even first-time non-violent ex-federal offenders, there's no provisions for an expungement at all. So what happens is, for the rest of my life, I will have this record following
over your head.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I'm lucky to have, you know, a job today. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
it took a while. And it took a great
mm-hmm.
deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the different pipelines and different systems to try to figure out why
do.
On a congressional level this has not passed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very, very frustrating because for the last...
Now, does this prevent you from also going to school, also getting financial aid? Because I know on the state,
mm-hmm.
not such as the federal, I don't know much about the federal, which I should,
yeah.
my brother did the crime, but does it prevent you from doing that as well?
It's funny you say that because not too many people know about the on a federal level. A lot of people don't know about the state either. But I know with a CDS charge, which is, and I'm dabbling in this on the state side now. With a CDS charge, being charged with having control of a dangerous substance, which is, you know,
mm-hmm.
drugs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you're not able to get financial aid to go to
mm-hmm.
school.
Mm-hmm.
I fortunately didn't have that problem because
okay, great.
Jail. I did start my undergrad degree, and when I came home, I actually finished my bachelor's in psychology.
Okay.
I actually didn't have that problem. But in many cases, many of our brothers out there that are quote-unquote, you know, hush drugs,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. it's unfortunate that when they go to jail to be rehabilitated and then come
there really
home.
There is no rehabilitation for them.
Yeah. They can't go to
right.
school, you know,
right.
and sometimes they can't even go to trade school, even if they get bonded,
right.
which that is on the federal side, you know, when you get bonded.
Right.
And bonding just means that
everything shows
you're
up.
Secure for this amount of money if you happen to work mm. for this company, just in case you decide to do something again, which doesn't happen, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
so how
my,
long
that,
does this follow you? For you, forever, because
forever.
You can't even get an expungement, even as a first-time offender, it will just haunt you for the rest of your life. But how far back can they look into your past? Is there a stipulation on that?
In some instances, I know they go back as far as 10 years. And like I said,
okay.
mine is almost 16. And I know in some instances, I remember looking at job applications and it said, have you ever been convicted of a crime within the last 5 years? Then they said 7 years. Then they
mm-hmm.
changed it to, have you ever been convicted of a crime? And if so, please explain. It doesn't necessarily
mm-hmm.
exclude
oh,
you
please.
From this job.
Yeah, whatever with that.
But, in honesty, it kind of does exclude you from
yes,
this
absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And finally, there are a group of people.
So
out
they've
California.
Already boxed you and stereotyped you and boxed you into a particular person. So it
exactly.
does exclude you. They can't legally say that, but of course
no.
they have. Of course they have.
No. You're absolutely right.
You know? Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So you did this crime, and it was more like a white-collar crime because you were doing checks and,
mm-hmm.
and whatever, so forth. But what's the difference between white-collar people who do same kind of level things, but more like from the banks,
mm-hmm.
from the, you know, how they're not looked at the same way as you're looked at.
No.
You're looking at just a low life who sold some checks and just some credit cards, but they're looking at like they were bright, they were smart, and they were intelligent, and I don't understand the whole concept of it all.
Well, the white collar, I mean, to be honest with you, the white collar crimes more or less took place with people who worked for like Wall Street and, like you said,
mm-hmm.
banks. Because when I was incarcerated at a Fairton Correctional Facility in Cumberland County, I was there with like lawyers, businessmen,
mm-hmm.
doctors
mm-hmm.
who
mm-hmm.
did some things against HMOs, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And
right.
What happened?
But they're still looked at different than you are, though.
Yes, it's looked at as an intelligent crime, more or less.
Right.
Something
a petty
that people are on the street, yeah, are hustling. Which I'm not trying
mm-hmm.
to. Down to people that are hustling, but I'm not trying to glamorize it either.
Absolutely.
I don't want to glamorize any of this stuff, and I want to say I take
mm-hmm.
full responsibility for what I've done. I'm not
mm-hmm.
trying to glamorize it. Should I have done that time? Sure, I have no problem with the time. But my issue is that, you know, again, every time somebody looks at my record forever,
Right.
You know, they're always going to see that. You know, I can understand 10 years, 15 years, but forever.
I can't even understand that law. I can't even give you that, Jamie, because here's my thing. If you had been a career criminal, I get it. I get it. Your ass just don't know what the hell to do with your life. But if you make a mistake and do something one time, there should be a reasonable amount of time for you to not be able to join society on a regular basis and do everything that everybody else is doing that has not done a crime. But at some point, your life should be given back to you.
Mm-hmm.
It should be given back to you. To continue to make me be accountable for something that I did when I was 20 and 18 and 19 for the rest of my entire life doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
But it makes sense to them, but it doesn't make sense.
No, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right.
How do you become a productive person in life if you have this? And see, you were strong, Jamie. You were able to, you know, to overcome all this stuff and put it aside and keep on moving. But that doesn't mean that every person can do that. If something is going to hold them down for the rest of their life, it literally can literally hold them down.
Yeah.
Because they don't see
it
out. They don't see an out.
You're absolutely
right.
So there's
got to be some type of stipulation, change in our federal system and state system. And I know Obama is trying to make some changes. I get that. He's trying to make some changes with that because you cannot be held accountable for something that happened so long ago when I'm trying to move on and do better things with my life. How can I do that if you're going to keep smacking me in my hand and telling me something I did already?
I was blessed to have a great family structure. I've got great brothers who love me, as well as friends and you know, other family members.
Mm-hmm.
The key issue, like you said, is like you keep getting slapped on the hand, on your hand for the rest of your life. And I've even called members of Congress. I mean, Charlie Rangel in Harlem has been introducing the Second Chance for Ex-Offenders Act since the year 2000, and it has been dying in committee since 2000. I don't think I'm pretty sure it hasn't even been reintroduced this congressional term just because there's so many other things going on at this point. And, I mean, the huge unfairness for people who are unaware of things on the congressional level, and I don't want to get too, you know, too
technical.
Deep about it, too technical. But our small little bill, which would allow first-time nonviolent ex-federal offenders to be able to petition a court for an expungement, to put a petition forth and say, listen, Your Honor, this guy, Jimmy Woodard, this is one and only offense. Since then, he's held down a job.
Mm-hmm.
He's volunteered. He's did this and he did that. That was 16 years ago. Do you think the court could allow him to have an expungement? You can go deliberate for however many weeks or whatever and come back with your conclusion.
That
bill would allow it. I can't even do that because what happens is the bill is introduced, any bill is introduced to a subcommittee. Now, the funny thing about it and the sad thing about it is our bill is introduced to the subcommittee on the House Committee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. So imagine what they have to deal with and work with. Our bill probably won't even get mentioned because they're dealing with Homeland Security and they're dealing with terrorists.
Right.
So that's the reason why think that
I'm a little
dying.
Confused because on a state level, if you committed a certain crime, you can get an expungement.
Yes, you can.
You can even get an
expungement
if you have multiple. Right. You can even get an expungement if you've had multiple charges for the same damn thing.
Yes.
So why in the world would they hold you accountable for something that was not a violent crime for the rest of your life? It's so unfair. It makes absolutely no sense. So then once again, like we were talking, like Nancy said, like you get ready to marry somebody and let her father hear about this. But you are the worst person in the world. He could have loved you all the way up to the day he found out about that, and then he puts you in a box, and that's where you stay.
You're absolutely correct.
He doesn't see any of the good you've done. He doesn't see any how you treat his daughter, none of that. All he sees is that you committed a crime, and that's how society has made it so unfortunate for our brothers out here because even the brothers who do sell drugs and hustle my head and do all of that, listen, like I said, I am not condoning anything that they do is wrong, point blank, but whatever reason you're doing it for, it doesn't still speak for your character.
Yes.
It doesn't speak for your character. It doesn't say that you're a bad person and you're, you know, you're this and you're that. Now, if you're a cold-blooded killer, that we talk about a whole nother, you know, that's a whole nother show in itself. But
yes.
We're just talking about somebody out here trying to make a couple dollars to make ends meet and got caught out here doing it with no intention of hurting anyone.
You're absolutely right about that. I think they don't allow it to basically promote recidivism, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, when people come out of jail, the chances of them going back are heightened as
right.
long as they're out and they can't find a career. And I'm not just going to say employment, because employment can mean working at a corner store doing something, not owning the
mm-hmm.
store, but
mm-hmm.
working there. I'm talking about a career with benefits and eventually
right.
with the retirement when you know,
right.
when you get to that
right.
age.
Right.
But it's already hard out here for people that don't have records. So
right.
imagine if you're a non-violent offender
right.
with a record. And it's just like you said, on a state level, because we're moving to the state level now, you can basically do an expungement on your own if you know how to do it. It's self-explanatory. You get the application, and you can ask for an expungement. And once you fill out the paperwork, and then it's up to the court system. And I think if you're a multiple offender, it's like I'm pretty sure it's like every 7 years per offense, you know, if you're a multiple
right.
offender. But on, again, but on the federal level, nothing at
right.
all to this day.
Right, that's it. Something's got to be done about that. But if you, like I said, if a majority of people don't come and say something needs
mm-hmm.
to be changed, there is no movement that's going to change it. Like I was just saying before you came on, before I went to break, that, you know, we go to most people don't even go to city council meeting because
mm-hmm.
they're so unaware of their voice being needed. When my sister worked for the city and I would go to city council, there would be 10 people in the whole building. And I'm like, you think they care about what you 10 people say? So if we don't get a majority to say that that law has to be overturned, it's never going to be overturned.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Nothing's going to change. And so, but what do we – I don't even know how to even address that anymore, because it's just like I said, it's a smack on your hand every time you turn around and look in the mirror. You have to be reminded of something that you did. Yet, because you're black, it's really going to follow you, because we know the white-collar crime – people who were in there with you are coming home, and they are getting their lives back, and they are moving on, doing different and bigger, better things.
Exactly.
So it's very different for, you know, a young, not even say young, a black person committing a crime who, for them, it's a petty crime. What you did was something that, you know, you know what, it's just the point of a lawyer, what he did, or a doctor who wrote prescriptions because he's getting high. It's very different. It's very different. But they come home and they don't get smacked in the hand every single time they go do something. It's very different.
No, it is very different.
So that's why the law isn't going to change, because it's not made to change for certain people.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's not meant to change for certain people, because the people who it doesn't affect are the bigger people, so why do they care? But that's why it hasn't changed, and that's why it's probably never going to change. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it's probably going to be, you know.
Well,
we're
hoping it will.
Well, yeah, we can pray on that, and we can hope on that, because some things have got to change in our lives. And we were also, you know, just touching on the brutality in prisons, and, you know, how did it affect your family when you went away? Even though it wasn't that long, still you had kids at that time. Did it affect your family? Did it affect your relationship? You know,
of course. I mean, at
right.
the time, my son was two. I was
mm-hmm.
in a relationship for several years.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think I embarrassed my family, and I definitely think I embarrassed myself.
Right.
Because again, I mean, I went to Catholic grammar school, Jesuit high schools, while the college was working, and just made a very
bad decision, because there was no need for you to do it. You just did.
Nah, there was absolutely no need for me to
right.
do it. It was more or less out of greed than anything. But you
out
learn. You learn from your mistakes.
Right.
You know. And
but that's
and
what it was. It was absolutely a mistake. It wasn't something that you set out to do. It was something that you saw that was easy, and greed took over, and you did it. Okay, and you paid the time for that. Now you should be able to move on with your life.
Exactly.
You know?
And
well,
I do want to say I do vote. So tell those ex-offenders out there to check with their municipalities, their cities and states, and call the voting registration office, because I know I called the one in the county that I live in, and they said that many ex-offenders are allowed to vote, and they just
really
don't know it. You just, yeah, I voted. As soon as I, when I came home, I voted. I think I voted
Well, did you hear that?
I mean,
well, let's say that again. Let's put that back out there again, Jamie, because I'd like for them to know that, because I can probably rest assured tell you that 90% of them don't know that.
Yeah.
90%
well,
don't know that.
First and foremost, I want to say to the ex-offenders, take a trip down memory lane to watch Eyes on the Prize and see what our people went through to vote. I've always voted, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, when I was in the halfway house, I recall going to vote. When I was in the halfway house, but when I came home, I still voted. You know, I went to the polls. I said, listen, if they have an X by my name stating this guy can't vote for whatever reason, then fine, then I'll leave. That wasn't the
right
case. I saw my name.
Absolutely.
I showed my ID. I voted. I went in the booth, and it's history. I've been voting ever since, you know. So you
so
can
what
vote.
About, what,
your
about, what about doing the, what do you call it, thing when you go into to jury duty? Are you allowed to do that?
They call me for jury duty, but once they find out you have a record,
felony,
they'll most likely dismiss you.
Because
they think you'll have favoritism towards, you know,
okay,
the person
okay
that's
so,
on
so
trial.
That we know probably is not something that, who wants to do that anyway, that's an A-plus for that. But, so.
Yeah, well, it's a civil duty.
Once again,
so
ex-offenders, please check
vote
your municipality where you live.
Yes.
And make sure that you are given the right information about not being able to vote, because your word, your voice is still needed.
Exactly.
What time, Nancy, how much time we have going on?
Yeah.
I tell you, time just flies by when we're talking about something like so exciting and so great.
No,
time just flies by so fast. Nancy, how much time do I have left on the show?
Well, you know what I did? So we did something special. We extended it. The show's extended for this particular topic. I thought I kind of figured this is the response you would get.
Okay. So we're doing good. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's scary how most of the, we have so many listeners listening in, but nobody wants to call in and talk to us. It's you know, we get them sometimes.
Well, they're probably
sometimes
just listening right now. They're probably just listening. Yeah. I mean, right now, the greed in the for-profit prison industry and what's going on and why they're locking people up, and I try to talk to as many people as I possibly can and just let them know that it's just, at this point, it's just not, at any point in your life, it's just not worth it.
It's not worth
it. You know, it's more worth getting multiple jobs that pay less than $10 an hour than having
mm-hmm
to go through everything I wanted to go through. I mean, when I came home as an adult, you know, I was in my late 20s and I was working at a sheet factory, throwing sheets on the table for $5.15 an hour, 6 feet high, while other people sold, you know, either the
mm-hmm
elastic or made them into regular sheets. And this was like making like, I guess, $130 a week. And I had to pay half of the money to the halfway house, and then the other
and
half.
And you had a son.
I had to give you know, to the mother of my children at the time. And listen, it was a humbling experience. Wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but
right,
it definitely taught me that I shouldn't have partook in that crime at all.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And it's funny how when you talk to most people in Congress that we try to reach out to, or politicians, nobody has an answer. But when you talk about the Fed is like the boogeyman in the closet or the boogeyman under the bed, because nobody knows too much how the federal system works. They don't want to know. They just know that the feds can indict
a
ham sandwich.
So why? Because the feds control everything. That's why. All those criminals within it are the ones controlling the daggone world. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
And
but
so
the feds have
website
unlimited amount
website
of money. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What is your website exactly about? So give us an idea what, when we go on your website, what are we looking for?
Mm-hmm.
What is your website like?
Can you hear me?
Sorry. Yeah, we hear you.
Okay. No, I was just saying that the federal government has unlimited spending power and unlimited money to keep people in the court system. That's why people get afraid and their conviction rate is so high, because most people don't go to trial. Most people cop out.
Right.
And
that's another,
you know, they just don't
thing
want to deal with
the thing that they have made so easy for all black men to do is, even though you know you didn't do the crime, you don't need to do the crime, but you're so afraid of going to trial because once you get on that stand, you're already convicted no matter what.
Yes,
exactly. 90% of the time. So we take a plea bargain for something that we didn't even do just to be able to not have to go to jail or either cut the time down or not go to jail at all. It's so sad. So sad. But Jeremy,
yes.
What's your website? Tell me about your website.
Well,
the website is called
WeDeserveOurLivesBack.com. Once again, this website is called WeDeserveOurLivesBack.com. And it just tells people what we're doing as far as the bill is concerned and what we're doing and what we're trying to do as far as making so many people aware that, you know, the unfairness about not being able to get an expungement. And one other thing I want to clarify that a lot of people don't know, there's a key difference between a misdemeanor and a felony. You know, a misdemeanor is any time served on paper or any time served under the court system under a year and a day. And any time served after a year and a day is considered felony. And most of the time when people get convicted of something, it's more than a year and a day. So they're handing out felonies just like they're,
I'm lost. Go back again and explain it to me.
The difference between a misdemeanor and a felony.
Okay.
A misdemeanor is any time served in jail and or on paper, on supervised release, under a year and a day. So less than a year and a day is considered a misdemeanor.
Okay.
Any time served on paper, as we call it, on paper or supervised release, or any time served incarcerated more than a year and a day is considered
a felony. So it's not the charge itself, it's the time.
It's the time. And the crime and the time have go hand in hand.
Right,
the crime and the time. Most people, when they go to jail, they get more than a year and a day in some cases.
Well, but what about people who have committed a crime who have got probation? I guess they would make sure it was extended to so it would be changed over to a felony then.
Well, you could say, okay, I'm on probation for 3 years, according to what's your crime, you know, and then it becomes whatever class felony there is. I mean, even though it's nonviolent, all they want to do is hear felony. Oh, felony. Oh, my God, you have a felony. So we can't do too many things for you. So I'm sorry about that, sir. But now, since there's a organization in California, Band of Box, and what they've been doing is they've been pushing, and they finally have that question taken off the job application, saying where, if you've been convicted of a crime, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's cool. But now what's happening is the insurance companies who are insuring this business are saying, no, that person is a liability.
Right.
I don't care how long ago that person did this crime, whether it's violent or nonviolent. If it's nonviolent, they're a liability. So now you jump over one hurdle, and then there's a higher hurdle. So now we're trying to find out who these insurance companies are to try to have a discussion with them.
Go through them, right.
And they're the ones
that are really holding it up.
They're holding it up now. So once we jump over that hurdle, it'll be something else.
Then we can go somewhere from there. Do you think that a nonviolent crime, they look at you as you had a choice? But violent crimes, they say something is wrong with them. So we find out what's wrong with them, in the head. Do you think that could be possibly what's going on as well? You know what I'm saying?
It depends on who's in the room and who you're talking to. If you're talking to an attorney, if you're talking to somebody who's been through the system like me, if you're talking to somebody who's been victimized, you're going to get a different answer.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on who you've been talking to. If you're a victim, they're going to say, you got victims on the phone right now saying that's good because somebody stole my credit card and I had to go through this, that, and the third.
Right.
Not to glamorize this either, but that money was FDIC insured. So if you didn't commit the crime, you not only didn't have to pay back the money if you didn't do it, but when they caught the person had to pay back the money as well as have some type of fine depending on the monetary value of the crime that they got away with. So
how long did you do this before, and how did you get caught? How did it happen, if you don't mind?
I don't know. No, I'm here to know the whole bar. You can ask me any question you want to. I did it for about a year, And I got caught at the time because I actually took at the time they called laptops dope, and at the time they were like volunteers, which people didn't really have. It was a new thing. So I actually took two notebooks, and I was told that the sting for the notebooks was actually set up for someone else. But of course, I mean, I took the bait, and then you know, they actually caught me, and I confessed because I was actually with at the time when I took them, when we were leaving, I was actually with the mother of my child and my 2-year-old son. So I basically confessed to everything and was sent to PTI, pretrial intervention.
So wait. You confessed to doing that for a year instead of just confessing to the damn two notebooks?
I mean, because my son was with me at the time and the mother of my children, so I didn't want to. I didn't want them to go through anything.
I'm not confessing nothing. You ain't got me on. I took the two notebooks. I don't know what else you talk about. No, that ain't going to happen. That is not going to happen. No, I'm not going to do that. No, you ain't going to give me that. No. Whatever you got me on, that's what we're going to deal with right now. No, that's it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Nope, that's it. And unless you got it on videotape or you got somebody, the stool pigeon, the stool that told on me who was doing it with me, no, we ain't going to mention none of that. Mm-mm. I will kill your ass and bury you in the backyard.
What can I say? I'm a bad criminal.
Which means you ain't have no business doing. Absolutely, which means you ain't have
no business
doing none of that, because you done admitted to every damn thing. See what I mean? One mistake. Saying for all. He know he ain't have no business doing this.
One mistake. And unfortunately, through wordplay, threatening Dyfus mother of my children wound up getting a federal misdemeanor out of it.
Wow.
And that's one of my, you know, true regrets. Honestly, if I could.
But she got caught up in it too.
Yeah. If I could go back to jail right now and do a year and they said they would wipe her record
and take it away
from federal misdemeanor, I would do it only because I should have stuck to doing it by myself, with myself, and no one around.
Wait. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me stop you, and I'm not trying to be, you know, messed up about this, but hold on a second. She knew you were doing it, and she helped you do it?
I wouldn't say help, but she knew.
No, Jamie, it's either she did or she didn't.
No, I said I wouldn't say she helped, but she knew. She knew. Yeah.
So then how did she get caught? She gets charged with it. How did she get caught up in it then?
Because they from what I understand, they asked her, has she ever seen mail in the house with anybody else's name on it? And the fact that at the time there were four people living in the house, so she said, yeah. And once she said, yeah, they was like, okay, you know. But the four people that live in the house were family members.
Okay.
So it wasn't like it was somebody else's mail that I had from the post office because I didn't take it there. It was more or less like that. You know, remember, when they read you the Miranda rights, they say whatever you say can and will be held against you.
So neither one of y'all ain't had no business doing nothing.
Yeah, I know, right? So that's my one
regret,
you know?
Yeah, I feel you on that. You feel bad about that because you got her caught up in something that you decided to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but luckily, she
didn't
have to serve any time, which
right.
is a good thing.
But now is this something she has to deal with too, though?
She has to deal with because of the field that she's in.
Oh, it's a misdemeanor for her, though.
It's a misdemeanor, yeah. She has to deal with it because of the field that she's in.
Okay.
But if she decides to go in a different field,
it won't
bother her as much because they're lightening up the Rockefeller laws on a state level, the Rockefeller drug laws on a state level, through, you know, Governor Rockefeller in New York at the time in 1973. As they're lightening up those laws, it always has to start on the state level, and then finally when the feds get a little bit tired, which they never really do, they'll say, okay, maybe possibility.
She's doing okay. Everything is fine. She's working,
she's doing okay,
you know, doing her thing. That's great. That's great.
Yes.
And it is a thing, you know, where they will play your family against you to no end. You know, I remember when they were looking for my husband and they came to my mother's house. I was pregnant with our youngest daughter, and I was at my mother's house. and they said they were looking for him, and we're like, well, for what, you know? And for some reason, cops, federal cops, state cops, whatever they are, feel like they are so superior that you better not talk to them a certain kind of way. No, you're looking for him. You ain't looking for me. So what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
So they said to my mother, you know, he's violent. He's got guns. He kills people. My mother said, you idiot. We've known him since he was 17 years old. He is not a violent person. He's not here. Get out of my house.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did was they tried to scare me. If you don't tell us where he is, we're going to take your daughter, we're going to take the baby, we're going to have a baby. I said, my job is not to tell you where he is. Your job is to find where he is. Now go do your job. And if you find him, then y'all are good. If you catch him and he's here, then y'all can do whatever y'all need to do to me. But as far as me telling you where he is, oh, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to do that. And they were so upset, but there was nothing they could do to me. Because I don't have to volunteer any information to you. That's not my – your job is to find him. If you catch him in my house, then you can say, now, it's an accessory to whatever, do whatever you want to do or whatever. But you can't do anything to me, but they try to scare you with their scare tactics and try to make you, you know, say or do or anything. And that's what happened with you guys. They asked her a random question, and she answered the question honestly, not having anything to do with what you guys were what you were doing, but it backfired on her. You know, and it's unfortunate because they will do that. They will definitely play family members against each other. You know, definitely.
Oh, they definitely will. And I didn't want to make that choice. I would have. Oh my God, if she'd went to jail, it would have been even worse for me because
yeah.
You know, her and I both in jail, and my son. You know,
and your son is out, right?
Yeah,
right.
But it's definitely, like I said, it's definitely a learning experience. And,
but they let you go to PTI. Isn't PTI where you don't – oh, wait. Well, PTI is a program. If you don't get in trouble again, they take your record away.
PTI is supposed to stand for pretrial intervention. And most people, back in the day, when you went through PTI, it basically meant that your chances of going into a program and staying out of the jail was greater. But they still – no, they still sent me to jail because, remember, in 1973 – they started the blueprint for the federal guideline system. Basically, it meant that they had a category for every crime that was supposedly committed.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the monetary value of that crime, this is the time you would get. And unfortunately, the RICO Act, which a lot of it was basically, you know, robbing trucks, the RICO Act and crack, not powder cocaine, crack were the two crimes that really got the most time. I mean, at one time, you had child molesters and murderers that were getting less time.
Right.
The people who got caught with a key of cocaine. Key of cocaine.
Right.
And it made absolutely no sense whatsoever. No sense whatsoever. You know?
Hey, Nath, do you have anything you want to input with all this that we're talking about? My producer always stays in the back until I fall out, you know. Nasty.
I'm right here. You hear me loud and clear? I'm enjoying the conversation, you know. Brother Jamie's, you know, giving him a lot of information that for those who can relate to him is definitely chime in. I'm just watching the boards. We have a lot of listeners right now following the show.
That's great.
All through New Jersey and New York. So, I mean, got Philly online. I got a couple of texts. He said, you know, he's just another young man. I'm sick of this guy right here. He's actually an officer from North. He totally supports you, brother. You know, he likes to be called Brick City 911, but he just want to say, you know, stay up, brother, and keep doing what you're doing. That's coming from an officer.
Appreciate
so,
we appreciate that. We appreciate that. I really appreciate you coming on and giving your story, because there's so many people who are afraid of telling their story because you're stigmatized a certain kind of way. Everybody knows me, knows I don't care. I am an open book. You know, it is what it is. You can like me, love me, or leave me. It doesn't really matter. You know, Nasty shut me down with my cursing, so now I have to become a whole different person. You know, I'm not really feeling that.
No,
but, you know.
Not all the time.
Our sponsor said, oh, Nasty. No, our sponsor said, Nasty, she's a little raw. If you have to get rid of her or bring her in. So, you know, and I get it. Some people, I might be a little bit too much for people. I get it. But you know what? It's who I am. You know, it's just who I am. But I appreciate the fact that Jamie had no qualms in coming. When he called me, he said, "Uli, I want to come on the show. I want to talk about something that's very sensitive to me." And I said, you know, when you call me and tell me you want to do a show about your personal life and not your life affects so many others, I'm so down for that. You know, I'm so down for that. You know, we do relationship shows. We do talk about sex. We talk about, I really want to talk about some real stuff, you know. And this tonight was probably one of our really great shows, I have to say. You know, because it touches so many different people, and it affects our communities as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It does.
Yeah.
It definitely does. And people, like I said, vote. Not every ex-offender can vote. It definitely pertains to the municipality in the city and state. But I'm saying the majority of us who don't vote, who think we can vote, it's like the boogeyman. And I tell people, like, what if I walked past your house and just looked at you and said, "Don't come outside ever again."
Right.
And you just walked in the house and never came back outside.
Right.
That's how people take the myth of not being able to vote. Like,
right.
No. You can vote. Just, you know, call voter registration to see if you can vote.
Right.
But, you know, and
if you're on that list, do it. Do it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. There's nothing to lose. If you
go
and you vote and they find out if you have, you know, a felony and they don't want your vote, then if they take it away, that's nothing you can do. But at least let your voice be heard by going and doing and pressing that button. You did your part. You know, and that's something that I think a lot of us don't understand, you know, when it comes to, I know I have a brother-in-law who was incarcerated, and he was like, "I vote every year. And if they tell me I can't come when I come, then I'll stop. But I go every single year." And I'm like, your vote don't mean nothing. Because I was under the impression that once you have committed a crime, you can no longer, we just talked about this, Nass, you can no longer vote. Now, this is some news to me that I've never even heard of
before.
Well,
you definitely have to be out of jail when you're voting.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, they it's called gerrymandering, basically, where in some states they take, they split the prisoners. All the prisoners that's in that state or in that area, what they do is they split them up evenly, and they give each representative or person that wants to become an incumbent for whatever office he wants to hold, they give that person each of the inmates as a vote. That's when you're incarcerated.
Oh.
When you're free, it's something totally different. You walk, you know, you walk your behind to the voting polls, or you register, and you definitely go vote. I mean, I stayed on some of my speaking engagements, and people was like, "I know I can't vote. How do you know? Did you call?" Like,
how would you know unless you find out, right? Because, Jamie, they were told that. That's the thing. That's what we were just talking about. I read something online today. I was trying to get some statistics about how many black men are incarcerated, and there was a site that said, "Stop repeating statistics that are not true," or "Stop repeating things that you heard that you don't even know to be true." And I just did that tonight by saying, "Oh, they don't want us to vote, and they don't want us to vote." And now you're telling me in some cases you absolutely can vote as a citizen. So please take advantage of that. Find out whether or not you are that one, because that one vote counts. That one more person counts.
Yes, and two things I want to say quickly. You said statistics. I don't really go by statistics because
they
can be manipulated
to
be in favor or against whatever you want them to be. So I don't really follow statistics. When they say, "Oh, 60% of black people aren't graduating from college," I don't believe that, because I know in most of the southern states there are a lot of black people that are graduating from college, especially in the northern as well and around the world. So I don't really believe statistics. And then you have to look at who's providing those
statistics.
Look at the organization and the company that's providing those statistics.
Right.
Who are the organizations? Are they Republicans?
Right.
Are they right wing? Are they the Tea Party?
Right.
And most of those
organizations
are against whoever they're putting statistics against. And they,
And what are the statistics for anyway? Like, what are they really for anyway? It's funny because even with applications, you know, something as simple as not even just a job, an apartment application or a job application, or why do you need to know my ethnicity? Why? What does that matter?
So they can exclude you from things.
And that's exactly why I don't even fill it out. I leave it. You do not and I repeat, do not have to fill those boxes out when they ask you those questions, because that does not apply to anything that you are filling out that application for. So you can leave it open and let them choose what the hell. And I say it all the time. I say, it depends. My father's white. My father's white. My mother's black. I don't know. Monday sometime I'm white. Tuesday sometime I'm black. I don't know. It depends on what I want to be that day. But there's no point in me filling this out because I don't know what day, what today, what I feel like being. Today I'm just an Oreo. I don't know. Then on this paper, so I don't have to fill it out. You know, so your statistics really absolutely mean nothing. And they do more harm than anything. You're absolutely right with that. They do more harm than anything.
And people follow them. And we're not the minorities. You know that, right? Because the majority
of people of color. I just
said
to Nasty. I said Nasty. They keep trying to identify us as minorities, and we are not the minority.
White
people actually are the minority now. We outnumber them by 10,000. Let me tell you something else that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
When this whole white chick who want to be black, oh, Lord, I don't even know why I'm even getting to this today.
I didn't even follow that, so I don't know too much about it.
You know what? I did for a hot second, Jamie, but it was so stupid that I could no longer even put my mind into even listening to her, because she sounds like a complete, as intelligent as she is, as educated as she is, she sounds so ridiculously stupid that it was just pissing me off. So I said, let me not even get into this anymore. But the unfortunate thing, the reason why I'm bringing it up, because we're talking about my ethnicity, and because I'm mixed, it's strange how when you're white, you can decide what you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're black, you cannot decide. You have a drop of African American in your blood. You're black.
Yeah.
No, it's fun, but you're black. Now, she says she identifies with being black. Well, I identify as being rich, but it's not helping me. So I'm a little upset that she can identify as being black, and it works for her. I have a big problem with that. So, you know, I just think the society is so ass backwards. And here's another thing. She identifies as being black. You've got a job at one of the supposed to be one of the most important places for us as black people. And you didn't look into her background?
No, I didn't follow.
No, you didn't. You didn't even look into her background. She has two Caucasian parents. She's not even mixed. Caucasian parents. Now, had that been a sister trying to go and get a job at some kind of white place, that would never have went down like that. But we're so willingly open up our door for everybody without any kind of fault at all, that we are the ones who get smacked in the face over and over again. So it's unfortunate we don't look into things for our people, like the white community looks into things for them. You know.
That's right. Well, we can close that time now.
Okay.
All right. So any closing thoughts, Nash, before we close out?
Definitely. Again, the website is called WeDeserveOurLivesBack.com. I want to give a shout-out to my new brother from another mother, Marcus the Inventor. He's going to do his thing. My brother Katie, Jason, all the family and friends. I can't name everybody's name only because, you know, it's a lot of people, Monique as well. But I want to give a shout-out to the word no, because the word no is a great word. I'm going to tell you why real quick, because it makes you want to ask why. It makes you want to continue to do research. It makes you want to work harder, and it also makes you earn that yes when you finally get that yes. So when people tell you no and the door closes, always do your research and ask why.
Find out how to open that door up.
Find out how to open that door. And once again, the website is WeDeserveOurLivesBack.com. I hope to see some of my people out at some of my speaking engagements.
Well, Jamie, what you can do is give me those dates for any speaking engagements, and we will definitely post them on the Every Woman Talks Show
I appreciate it.
Site. And thank you so much for calling in. We'll
no
have
problem.
You again at a later
oh.
time.
Thank you.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
I got a question, Brother Jamie. First of all, I enjoy the conversation, brother. Ooh, you gotta let your guests come on the Man Up Show. You have to. Oh my God.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I'll share.
Oh my God. He's a strong black man.
Let me know. Definitely.
Along. Yeah. Yeah, the man of the
Milk
Quick. God, you know, a lot of brothers.
I'll come up on the man of the Milk Quick.
We'll talk behind the scenes.
Yo, real quick. I want to, my son, Noah Elijah Wooded, just graduated from Snyder High School in Jersey City as the valedictorian of his class.
Oh, absolutely.
He's going on to the University of Arts in Philly, and I love him. Your father loves you. Our 18-year-old and 9-year-old, and they're doing great in school. And I wish them all the best of luck, because I'll be taking them to college in August. So
we do too. We wish you all the best too, Noah. Go do your thing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Jamie, you can talk to Nass behind the scenes. I'm going to close out my show.
All right. No
I want to thank Jamie Wooded for coming in and giving us some insight on so much. Once again, this is the Every Woman Talk Show. I love you guys. We'll be back next Tuesday. Peace out.
Hey, Uli, got an ending for you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be Uli's new ending on the show. So we appreciate everybody tuning in. And we'll see you next week. Let's try to get this going versus song for you. Let's see. Let's get the boards lit up for us. We're going to be all right.